Hi, my name's Chris Scott, and this interview was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For the latest news and terms and conditions, go to ukwineshow.co.uk.
Hi, my name's Chris Scott, and I'm here with Professor Rainer Jung. How are you, Professor?
Thank you. I'm fine.
Excellent. You're the Professor of Enology, or winemaking, as I like to call it, at Geisenheim, so quite an illustrious body. So are you a winemaker by profession?
Yes, I'm also a winemaker by profession, yes. I'm even coming from a wine-producing family, so I was growing up with winemaking.
How come you landed up here and doing academia as opposed to sort of producing Rieslings and all that sort of stuff in Germany?
I just studied here, and then I found some interesting research projects, and then I stayed here.
Fair enough. It's a nice place here in Geisenheim.
Yes, it is.
Excellent. So have you been here the whole time since degree?
Yes, I have been sometimes abroad. I've worked some time in California, but then I came back here. Yeah.
What we're going to talk about today is a wee bit about oxygen ingress and some of the different packagings. You've done some research into these sort of effects. We might even talk a wee bit about plastic corks. But oxygen ingress, broadly, that's oxygen getting into wine, isn't it? What can oxygen do to a wine?
It depends on what phase of the wine production oxygen comes into the wine. So, for example, as for the time before fermentation, a lot of research has been done, and it showed that it has not the biggest influence for the most varieties if you have an oxygen contact or not in this phase. Oxygen can improve the development of yeasts before.
Yeast needs a bit of oxygen, yes, doesn't it?
Before fermentation. But the problematic situation starts after fermentation. If there's no protection of the wine, if the barrel is not full, then oxygen can, do different things, can change aroma components of the wine, can change the phenolic situation in the wine. So after fermentation, it really gets interesting.
Sometimes a bit of oxygen before fermentation can be a good thing because it burn off some of the lighter aromas. And I understand, you can tell me if I'm wrong, but it can result in wines being a bit more stable for longer-term aging.
In general, it is more that the growing of the yeasts are going faster, and there's a bigger population, and then certainly you are changing the situation of fermentation, and certainly then you are changing also the situation of the aroma composition.
Oh, okay.
So I think this is an effect.
Is that more if you're doing wild fermentations, though, because you get a, as opposed to inoculated yeast?
No, it is also for fermentation without wild yeast.
How does the flavor change?
Yes, because you have a different quantity of yeast, and if you have a different quantity of yeast, the process of fermentation is going faster or slower. And then if you have a very fast fermentation, and if you don't cool the fermentation, you are losing a lot of aroma because you have a lot of CO2 in a short time. And if it goes slower, it's different.
Okay, so the wine's got some oxygen before fermentation. Fermentation is reductive, i.e. It absorbs oxygen, removes oxygen from the wine. Mm-hmm. So after fermentation, I imagine most wines have pretty low levels of oxygen. Mm-hmm. People talk about micro-oxidation.
For red wine, yes.
Yeah, just to soften tannins and things like that. But a lot of work these days in oxidation is all about after bottling or at bottling time, particularly with screw caps, where if you don't have a wee bit of if you remove too much oxygen with a screw cap hardly any oxygen gets in through the screw cap, you can sometimes land up with reductive flavors. But once the wine is ready for bottling or packaging, what are the key issues associated with oxidation at that point?
Yes, when the wine is ready for bottling, and then everybody is looking for SO2 content of the wine because he wants to bottle a stable wine. Mm-hmm. And then you store it in a tank. It starts already with that tank. If that tank is full or not, or if you have CO2 or nitrogen atmosphere over the wine or not before bottling. And then you transport the wine into the filling machine. Yep. You can do that by pumping. You can do it with the inert gas, which would be the best way against for protection against oxygen. And then you have different types of filling machines. You have long pipes, short pipes. You have evacuation of bottles or not.
Do those pipes not normally get flushed out with carbon dioxide first?
Not in any case.
No.
Okay. And then you can have an empty bottle which is full of carbon dioxide, or it can be full of oxygen when you bottle it. And then you can fill it from the top with a short pipe, which goes a little bit faster if you want to have a fast-running machine. Or you can do it with a long pipe, which goes a little bit slower, but then, yes, you have this lower quantity of oxygen, yeah.
Okay, so there's quite a few options there, even in bottling.
Yes.
Okay, and do winemakers typically look at the oxygen in the wine after bottling as well as before? Because they do their adjustment before bottling. So do you think they actually look at it afterwards just to see how these changes?
You know, I don't know if all winemakers are looking for the oxygen content before bottling. Very often they are looking for, with the indirect measurement, for the SO2 content.
Yeah.
They are taking care about that. But nowadays it is really correct to look for the oxygen in the wine before bottling and in the wine after bottling.
How do you measure that?
There are very new systems to measure it, non-destructive methods, optochemical methods with you install in the bottle, you can install oxygen-sensitive spots in the headspace, but also in the wine. And then you can measure from outside. You illuminate that spot with a light, and then you get a signal back. That light changes depending on the oxygen load of that spot, and then you know how many oxygen you have in the liquid or in the headspace.
Okay.
So you know how many oxygen you brought in with your process during bottling, and then you can change the process if you need to do that.
Let's look at the packaging now. I'm particularly interested in some of the plastic bottles, because plastic bottles, you're starting to see a bigger increase in plastic bottles in the UK, partly to do with the fact that you can't take glass into some concerts and things like that.
Yes, sure,
So they're quite good from that point of view. Some people like them from an environmental point of view. The first PET bottles, or polyethylene?
Terephthalate.
PET bottles.
Okay. Okay.
The first wave of PET bottles I saw were just single PET, single shell. And my understanding was PET isn't really a particularly good barrier to oxygen. Even my dad used to work for a bottling company for fizzy drinks. And when PET bottles first came out, the carbon dioxide used to go out through the bottles as well a wee bit. So how good is just a straight PET bottle in terms of keeping oxygen in and out?
It cannot be used for wine. It is just the oxygen just passes through it, and you cannot store a bottle of wine for a longer time with a normal PET bottle.
How long would it normally be, do you think?
With a normal bottle, we never use that, because you really have to do something against oxygen protection. Everybody told us before we started our experiments with PET bottles that it doesn't make sense to use a bottle without any protection. But I would say maybe 3 or 6 months, depending on the storage conditions, temperature especially, and in some cases wines are stored at very high temperatures, and then you have acceleration of the chemical processes, and then also oxidation goes faster.
So you end up putting more sulfur dioxide or sulfides in the wines loading it up with sulfur. Okay, and some of the newer bottles I've heard about are multi-layer, so you get a PET, an oxygen scavenging layer, and then another PET bottle. So the oxygen passes through, but it doesn't actually make it to the wine, because it gets sort of mopped up on the way through. No one will tell me what the scavenging layer is. Do you know what it is?
Yes, so there it's two possibilities. You can use a scavenger, or you can have a multi-layer bottle, or you have both together.
Oh, multi-layer, they use aluminium on the bag and box.
In this case, it would be aluminium, but there are also other materials for example, even glass can be used. They bring in a very thin glass sealing inside of the bottle in one system, but they're using different materials to protect the oxygen going through. Using a scavenger as an easy scavenger is, for example, ascorbic acid.
In between the two slabs.
Which we could use, yes.
That's ascorbic acid. This is vitamin C, isn't it?
Yes, it's vitamin C. It's just so it's very simple. But the problem of a scavenger is that after some time, the scavenger is gone because oxidation is going on and scavenger material is away. So after that time, you have,
The normal degradation.
Yes.
Okay, and how long do this... Obviously, it depends on how much scavenger material and sulfur dioxide and all that sort of stuff, but if a non-protected bottle is 3 to 6 months, what would a multi-layer with a scavenging material be?
Again, depending on the storage conditions, I would say 12 months is no problem at all, but we also have bottles which are stored already for 24 months and they're still okay compared to glass.
Roseworthy do a lot of trials, and they use Semion a lot because they seem to think that Semion is quite sensitive to oxidation, and it's a good indicator. And are there other wines that are more stable or less stable? And what do you need to be more stable? I've heard that red wine is better in a PET bottle than a white wine, for example.
Yes, this is certainly correct because for red wine, a higher consumption of oxygen is possible. It changes the character too, but it will not change the character into oxidized situation like we have it in the white wine. This is depending on the phenolic constitution of those wines, which are absolutely different comparing a red wine to a white wine.
Yeah, you got a lot more stuff in there to mop it up, tannins and colors and all that sort of thing. Okay, so that's PET bottles. Mm-hmm. Do you think, like, we've got a PET bottle here in front of us, 2007 Shiraz. Why do people want PET bottles if they've got short shelf lives? What is the advantage?
I think it is not interesting for people who want to store wine for a longer time. So, you know, they want to know how long could we store wine in that bottle. But nobody would maybe store a PET bottle for 12 or 24 months. The reason to use it is that it's very light. Mm-hmm. So if you need to transport wine over a longer distance or, for example, in airlines, it is interesting for them.
People don't really, you shouldn't really be transporting wines in planes.
No, for the companies, the air...
Oh, to drink the wine. Oh, yes, no, that's fine. I like to do
that. Yes.
Nothing wrong with drinking wine on a plane.
And for reasons like this or for going into parties, to concerts or things like that, it is interesting material. Transporting wine in ships or lorries from the bottler to the supermarket, yes, you're saving a lot of weight and then you're saving a lot of energy to transport the material. That is the interesting aspect, I think.
Okay, well, that's PET bottles. I think we'll wrap it up there. And I think next week we'll chat about plastic stoppers.
Okay.
Excellent. Thanks very much.